Good evening. It's a pleasure to welcome Dr. Robert L. Green, Professor of Educational Psychology and Director of the Center of Urban Affairs of Michigan State University, to this program in the series, Where There's a Woman, conducted by the National Council of Jewish Women. I am Josephine Weiner, Mrs. Leonard Weiner of Detroit, past president of the National Council of Jewish Women. Grateful to Ms. Hannah Stein for loaning me her microphone on this occasion, and eagerly anticipating talking with Dr. Green. You see, I'm firmly convinced that where there's a woman, it's always wonderful to have a man, and particularly a man whose talents and interests are in the critical field of education for the disadvantaged. Dr. Green, I know you've just come back from a most exciting trip to Africa and Israel, and I know it was in connection with your work. Will you please tell us why you chose to go to these countries?
A very short time ago, Professor Abraham Minkovich, who is a member of the staff of the Center for the Study of the Disadvantaged at the Hebrew University, was a guest here at Michigan State University. I invited him to spend time at the Center for Urban Affairs at this university to look at ways in which we're attempting to provide quality education for disadvantaged American youth. We discovered over a day and a half period that many of our concerns were quite in common. I shared with him our efforts to develop quality education programs for youngsters who, for generations, have been at both an economic and an educational disadvantage. I continued to communicate with Professor Minkovich while here in the country, and he felt that perhaps a direct on-site visit to Israel would allow us to look at ways in which research techniques, research strategies, and educational programs between the two countries might in some way complement each other. An invitation was extended to me by the Center for the Study of the Disadvantaged in cooperation with the National Council of Jewish Women. I gladly accepted the invitation and felt then that this would be an opportunity to also look at developing programs in Africa, primarily in East Africa, related to the education of the disadvantaged.
Thank you, Dr. Green. That gives us a little beginning. This center that you mentioned is the NCJW Center for Research in the Education of the Disadvantaged. And I wonder what you saw there that you think has meaning and usefulness to people here.
First of all, I must say that Dr. Haim Adler, the director of the center, and Mrs. Jane Cohen, the coordinator of the center, provided me through the center with an opportunity to visit almost every conceivable educational program in the country. We were able to visit, for example, Beit Shemesh, a development town approximately 25 miles from Jerusalem, which has a very stimulating educational program for disadvantaged youth. Dimona, a city approximately 200 miles from the city of Jerusalem, also has a series of stimulating educational programs for disadvantaged youth. I might add, too, that my family, my wife and three children, my three sons, rather, who accompanied me on the trip, also were able to visit similar programs in two kibbutzim, Ayelet HaShakar and Gesher HaSiv, both located in the northern part of the country. As an educator, I was quite concerned with the commitment that teachers in the country would have towards developing children educationally. There is a body of data that readily supports the point of view that the attitude of teachers, the concern that teachers have towards education, is significantly related to the achievement levels of youngsters in their classes. As a function of my visit to schools in Tel Aviv, a few schools in Jerusalem, in development towns and in the kibbutzims, I left with a strong impression that in Israel, there is a firm commitment that all children, no matter how disadvantaged they might be educationally, can profit from good and from quality instruction. I also left the country with another distinct impression, one that's highly related to education. The impression was essentially this, that in Israel, the plight of the poor is not necessarily just the plight of the individual who happens to be poor, but the plight of the poor is a nation's poor. And this is highly related to the quality of education that's available to youngsters in school, in schools in which one might find a high percentage of children who are basically poor. For example, I was able to visit one classroom in Damona. Damona, I believe, if my geography yet remains fairly accurate, is in the Negev Desert area, not too terribly far from the Dead Sea. In Damona, we were in one classroom, Professor Minkovich, Professor Lee Schumann and his wife, my wife and myself, in which youngsters were there representing 8 or 9 different countries. There were children in the classroom from Tunisia, from Morocco, from Libya, from India, from Eastern Europe. As a matter of fact, there were black youngsters in the classroom from Chicago who referred to themselves as black Hebrews. The thing that impressed me most of all was the fact that even though the composition of the classroom reflected a wide range, and I'm sure there was a wide range of educational readiness within that given classroom, the teacher and the teacher aide, and it was interesting to note that the country of Israel has readily assumed that aides in the classroom can work effectively with teachers who are highly trained to increase the educational status of children who are in fact poor. But in that classroom, there was a firm and an honest commitment on the part of teachers that they have an obligation to rapidly increase the math and reading skills of the children. So as, for example, even though there were children in the classroom who spoke Spanish, some who spoke French, some who spoke a little English, we found a Russian child or two in the classroom, so Russian was spoken as well, that each youngster was eagerly looking at ways in which they could readily handle Hebrew. The teachers, too, were engaged in a direct learning process with the children, and at the once again, assuming that intensive instruction with good, strong emotional support would allow the children in that classroom to rapidly become adequate students. So, in terms of the interest on the part of teachers, in terms of materials that we were able to see in the classroom, I left with the impression that unlike the kinds, the large differences or the large contrasts that we often find in American cities or American classrooms, as an example, it is not unusual today to find a relatively huge gap between the quality of education in a fairly well-to-do suburban school district and a hardcore inner city school in the United States. Examples can be found in such communities as Detroit, New York, Los Angeles, Philadelphia, throughout the country, Denver, Colorado, as another example. But in Israel, I did not find the discrepancy between the quality of education in the so-called best schools in Jerusalem and classrooms in development towns such as Damona and Beit Shemesh. And to me, this was encouraging, and I think we here in the United States can readily profit from that one lesson, namely that the commitment to the whole concept of equality of educational opportunity must be a fact of life not only in suburban communities, not necessarily only in communities in which the educational level and the income level of parents tends to be relatively high, but in communities that are relatively poor. In other words, children should not suffer because their parents are at an economic or an educational disadvantage. In Israel, this I did not see. There was a strong effort supported by the government in the country to equalize education from the north to the south.
The fact that there are about 60% or more of grade school age children who come bringing their disadvantage with them in the sense that they come from almost a culture of 200 years ago into a modern society, this makes it imperative that Israel find a way to bring them into the mainstream. And I think as we recognize in this country that it's imperative for us, we'll do a better job at it too. I was also interested that in your statement that the center made it possible for you to see all kinds of programs in Israel, because that is one of its functions, of course, to be a coordinator and a place where people are brought together who are interested in this common goal of educating the disadvantaged. Did you see any specific programs? You mentioned the importance of a teacher's expectations of a child's success in order for that child to succeed. I know one program that's been going on in the center has to do with a follow-up on Pygmalion in the classroom. Did you see anything like that there that would be applicable in this country?
Not necessarily so. I'm aware of the fact that Professor Minkovich is working with a relatively excellent program attempting to ascertain as to whether or not the so-called Rosenthal phenomena is operative in schools in the country. The data is currently being collected in that regard. I think there is one way of looking at an approach that would readily work against the Rosenthal phenomena. In essence, Rosenthal, a professor of psychology at Harvard, demonstrated that the attitudes and values of teachers can directly impact upon their ability to provide quality instruction in the classroom. In other words, if teachers perceive children as being poor and not able to profit from quality instruction, this might be reflected in their ability to become top quality instructors in the classroom. Let me give you an example of how the country is attempting to work against this phenomenon. As you know, the busing of school children is a major controversy in the United States. As a matter of fact, it's a major political campaign platform. It's a part, I might say again, of most politicians in the country who are seeking office. It's part of their platform pronouncements. There are those of us, and I include myself as one, who perceive busing not as a cure-all to all of the difficulties that urban children are confronted with, but we do, and I include myself as one, perceive busing as one strategy to bring about multiracial classrooms, classrooms in which white, black, brown, and red children can all learn together. In the country, there is a peculiar kind of problem, the problem that you refer to, Mrs. Weiner, namely that of bringing together the children of the poor, those who are at a disadvantage. I think the term that's used in the country is Sephardic, bringing together Sephardic versus Ashkenazi Jews, Jews from Eastern Europe, Jews who've been in the country for a relatively long period of time, those who are not at an educational disadvantage. There is a problem of bringing youngsters from various income backgrounds together in the classroom. In this regard, Mr. Adil, who is a deputy minister for education and culture, is directly responsible for a major busing program in Jerusalem and in Tel Aviv. The government has made the commitment that in each one of their schools, in the very near future, there will be a 60-40% ratio, 60% Sephardic, 40% Ashkenazi or more affluent Jewish children working together cooperatively in the classroom. These children are being bused when necessary to schools which will reflect a range of income levels. There is no opposition. There's no strong organized opposition, I must say, to busing in the country. And the reason for it is the fact that the federal government has made a commitment that in that regard, they will attempt to not make the mistake that we have made here in the United States by separating individuals by using artificial indices such as race or income levels. And I see that as being very noteworthy.
May I ask you, the 60-40%, is there a reason why those percentage figures were chosen?
Yes. Approximately at the time, 60% of the country might be categorized as being poor. I think the relatively recent large migration from Middle Eastern countries, from Morocco, from Libya, from Tunisia, and it's very interesting too, we were able to see in Dimona a relatively small but a growing number of Indian Jews, Jews from India who are coming into the country. I think the recent rapid migration into the country has brought in relatively large numbers of individuals who are at a disadvantage economically. This is why I strongly feel that the kind of support that is being made available to the center at the Hebrew University by the National Council is very important, because the center is playing a very significant role in terms of looking at ways in which the quality of education can be upgraded throughout the country for those youngsters who are coming in from countries that are basically poor. You were quite accurate in stating that the sudden inclusion of youngsters into a classroom from cultures that are quite removed from the rapid industrialization that is ongoing in Israel at the moment. Mixing children in the classroom whose parents are educationally at a disadvantage with youngsters from parent homes in which parents are highly educated is not always an easy task. But the significant factor is that the government has made a commitment that this is the direction in which the country must go, and they're willing to support it. Governmental commitment to equality of opportunity, educational opportunity, is important.
It's important, and it will only come if the people who are the government feel that way about it, isn't it, Ray? I wondered, too, what your overall impression of Israel was. Did you have a good time? Were you stimulated? What do you think is going on?
The overall impression was very good. I might add that we received many different kinds of reactions. I am black. I'm a black American. Not many black Americans visit the country. Not many are there. But even though the reactions varied, they were all very positive. For example, in my lectures at the university, very frequently, all of my lectures were basically academically oriented. Although there tended to be a range of questions about education and educational practices in the country, both in Africa and in the country of Israel, there's a tremendous amount of interest and concern about the problem or the relationships that exist between black and white Americans. And throughout the country, when people would meet me, they would first ask, "Are you from Africa?" And when I would respond in my Detroit English, they would know readily that I was an American. And then they would begin to pose questions about the problem of blacks in the United States. Are blacks integrated into American life? Especially among young Jews who have not been to the States, who are not familiar with life in America, there's a tremendous amount of interest regarding the status of black Americans. Therefore, in places like Akko, near Haifa, where individuals are quite a long ways from Tel Aviv and Jerusalem and have had essentially very little contact with black Americans, there was a tremendous amount of interest about, one, the educational status of blacks, the political status of blacks, the economic status of black Americans. And I found that the response to the kinds of issues and concerns that I raised with them in turn as a function of their questions, that the response was quite positive. The other thing that really made an impact on me was the obvious military readiness of the country. Israelis tend to take this in stride. As visitors to the country, we didn't. I would guess that the Israelis have been confronted with the threat of war for such a long period of time that to them, to see a soldier on the street in uniform and with a rifle is just another day event. To us, to my family, it was quite of interest. I spoke to a young Israeli guide who spent 3 days with us during a period of time in which we toured the northern part of the country. And he said, "You know that when a charge is made by an official in another country, in that we're going to wipe Israel out in the next week or the next month, we Israelis, we tend to look at it, we pass it off, although we're ready to protect the country." And my reaction was this: as an American, when Americans are threatened, they're prepared to act. So therefore, when we were there during the Christmas holiday season, at that period of time, there was a constant threat of attack, I believe from Egypt, and namely from Sadat. And we viewed it as being a real threat, and I was concerned about the whole question of safety. But the apparent relaxed mood of citizens, Israelis who have been a part of the country for a long period of time, assured us that there probably wouldn't be conflict, and there was not open conflict in the country. So I left the country basically with a feeling that this is a nation that's struggling to survive, and I've always been very much one who has been supportive of the underdog, and I see the country of Israel as one that's looking at ways to upgrade the status of people in the country who are poor, and who very much a country that's struggling to maintain its identity, and I think that's significant and important.
Yes, I suppose that if you're faced with the constant threat of trouble, you learn to live with it, and you also learn not to die because of it. I mean, living is one thing, but being alive is something else, and the Israelis are able to do both, which I think is quite wonderful. I wanted to ask you one last question, because I think our time's almost gone. And that is, do you see any relationships that ought to be formed, any specific relationships between our institutions?
Yes. I had a relatively lengthy discussion with Professor Seymour Fox, who is chairman of the Department of Education at the Hebrew University, the Minister of Education and Culture, Ilet Pelet, and Dr. Haim Adler, who is the director of the Center for the Study of the Disadvantaged. And we all discussed the possibility of an exchange professorial relationship between the Center for Urban Affairs at Michigan State University and the Hebrew University, the center at the Hebrew University. And it appears as though that there may be the possibility of securing funds to develop this exchange relationship, which will allow the two centers to more formally look at ways in which we can improve the educational status of poor youth.
Thank you very much, Dr. Green. It's been a pleasure. I feel very proud being a fellow Michigander of this interview with you, and it's been a pleasure meeting you on Where There's a Woman. Thank you for coming.